This is an Enterprise Time Security Podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with John Brennan from YL Ventures, and we're at Black Hat.
Great. Thanks, Ian. My name is John Brennan. I'm a partner at YL Ventures in our Silicon Valley office. We are a seed stage venture capital firm investing only in Israeli cybersecurity opportunities. We have an office of 10 people over in Tel Aviv, and we have an office of 4 in Silicon Valley.
Everywhere I look today, there's another cybersecurity company appearing out of the woodwork. All of them want money. How do you start to work out where to put money and where not to waste money?
Take a step back. The reason there are so many companies, I believe, popping up right now in cybersecurity is that there are a lot of needs. So there are a lot of gaps out there. Some of these are large gaps. Some of these are smaller gaps that potentially a legacy company with a feature or a new startup with a smaller solution might be able to fill. When we think about where we are going to invest, we consider ourselves very customer driven. Part of the reason we're only investing in Israel, part of the reason that we have an office of 4 people in the United States is because that's where our initial go-to-market is. And so we spend quite a bit of time cultivating those relationships, maintaining those relationships, and understanding from a customer perspective where their priorities are, where their problems are, and at the end of the day, what they have budget for. And then if we can take that and match that against the very, very best technologists coming out of Israel in security, we believe that we can identify the best 2 to 4 deals each year coming out of the region.
So how much of that becomes more of a marriage agency between customers of yours who've got needs and emerging new companies where you're trying to match them up, rather than more traditional, here's an interesting company, let's put some seed money in and see how it grows?
We're very fortunate in that we don't really have to compromise on that. Because we are in the U.S., because we are constantly listening to the customer base, we have over 60 venture advisors, most of whom are chief information security officers. We talk with them all the time. They help us generate investment theses, and we're always listening. We do a lot more listening than we do talking, especially on the U.S. side of things. And we really try to go to every conversation very prepared. When a founder comes to us and they're attacking a space that we know is a large problem, we very quickly are able to dig in and work with them, actually work alongside them, to make sure that they're matching the right skill set up against the right opportunity. In cases where we invest, we generally will have our founders or potential founders speak with 10 to 15 of our advisors in a very condensed time period. And over the course of those conversations, we can determine, is this a big enough problem to justify a venture investment? And that's really how we think about it. Now, of course, when you talk about the other parts of diligence, we have a team of 11 people in Israel, all of whom are able to deeply reference our founders. And so that's all going on in the background as well. But what we're really trying to do is take a look at what problem they're trying to solve and making sure it's a high enough priority to justify a $3 to $6 million check before there's even a product to sell.
If I have my analyst hat on for a second, we track around 650 cybersecurity companies on the market, and that's not all by any means. Many of them are single feature. You mentioned there that you're listening to CISOs and you're listening to what their problems are. When you're looking and talking to these companies, how many of them are just a single feature that actually solves a specific point in time problem? And how many of them have a plan that says, we're going to start with this, but actually we see this growing from here?
The majority of companies that we meet, I would say, are attacking an interesting problem. They're trying to solve a real problem that's out there. The majority of those, however, are not solving a big enough problem to grow into, if you think about how we underwrite deals, into a $300 or $400 million company, whether that's through acquisition or some other avenue to exit. What we do is we see two kinds of issues in terms of market size and go to market and product roadmap. We see companies come in with great vision. So they understand in a really far-reaching way what a company could grow into. And then we have to work with some of those founders and say, okay, that's great. We agree with your vision, but how are you going to build a go-to-market strategy where you get your initial customers and your initial verticals? How are you thinking about those first steps to even put yourself in the position to grow and scale into that great vision? The flip side of that is we see really smart founders come to us. Maybe they've spoken with one or two customers. Maybe they've spoken with peers in the industry, and they understand that there is a problem out there to be solved. But when we bring them at scale to customers, when we have 10 to 15 customer calls, usually with our advisors, oftentimes we'll discover is that, yes, what you're doing is interesting. It is filling a gap, but ultimately that gap is relatively small. There's either no or very little budget for it. And in an ideal world, a legacy provider would just add this as a module on top of what they're already doing. And so we see both of those situations. Our job as investors is to help guide potential founders into a position where they can really hit on both of those, short-term value and long-term vision. And in a case where a great team's doing that in a big problem space, we're happy to invest.
How many of those founders are open to that conversation? If we look at later funding, Series C, Series D funding, we see people from the various investment funds sitting on the board. Because at that point in time, there's enough money in there, there's enough direction in there, they've got to take this away from the techies, they've got to have a business focus and a business outlet. When you're at the pre-seed and the early seed, are these people open to having somebody with business knowledge, or is there still that founder moment where it's my baby and I created it and I know what it means?
That's certainly something that we have to diligence for. The vast majority, if not all, of the founders we meet are very good technologists, and they oftentimes do come at this from a technology-first approach. However, they're speaking with us for a reason. They want to build a business. The majority of founders that we meet, even though they're coming at it from a technical angle, want to match that technical capability up with the business need. Especially if you think about the founders in our portfolio, that's absolutely front and center. One comment, though, about what you said, it's in the later rounds that you have more board members, and then the business becomes more and more important. We actually don't think of it that way. When we invest at the seed, we are generally the only board members, unless we have a co-investor, and sometimes that does happen. We've done it several times in the past. We are thinking about building the business from the very beginning. Of course, the technology needs to be defensible. It has to be deep. There has to be IP there. But we very quickly start thinking about, okay, how do we build a pipeline? How are we going to get those first customers in? By the way, even if you are targeting a very specific kind of customer, early on, we want you to have 50, 60, 80, 100 conversations with customers in your target market, because that is going to inform your short-term, medium-term, and long-term strategy. And we actually get our founders focused on that at the very beginning, even pre-investment. Now, all that said, there are certainly founders who are more receptive and less receptive to that, and that's part of what we have to look for. We invest in people who are brilliant technologists building large businesses, and that's really what we have to do.
How are you finding these companies? There's a lot of opportunities out there for people to showcase themselves and take part in bidding for funding. But actually, there's an awful lot that fly under the radar for a long time, particularly those coming out of universities or those coming out of various programs run by large enterprises or companies associated with the military. Getting access and finding these people can sometimes be quite trialing. Do you go out and actively search for them, or do you let them come to you, or how do you find a balance?
We absolutely do both. So the reason that we have 11 people in Israel is just that. Our mandate is to see every team, so not every company, but every team and every founder who might be thinking about starting something in cybersecurity in Israel. We need to be in front of them, and the earlier the better. Our partner, Ofer Schreiber, runs the office over there. He has two analysts working for him, and they very actively are cultivating relationships. We have an insider's network of successful people in the Israeli ecosystem who bring deals to us. And then we have an amazing marketing department. Sharon Seaman, our VP of marketing, has a team working with her. Do we make sure that our brand and our name is ubiquitous with the early stage ecosystem? You asked about the balance. I always view it, I'm not so concerned whether we're outbound or inbound, as long as we see 100% of the teams coming out. And it really is about relationship building with people, because these are not companies. You can't go on PitchBook and download who's out there and who's raised seed funding. We have to be in the right communities and the right ecosystems within Israel, generally people coming out of the IDF. And as long as we're there on the ground seeing everything, we can then put ourselves in a position to evaluate the best teams and also to hopefully help those founders who are looking for that idea. We're happy to work with them to help them find the right market. And that's something that we are very open about as well.
One of the interesting things about cybersecurity for me is if I look at how universities are working with people who are doing research, cybersecurity is not yet high enough up their food chain. If you suddenly walked into a university and said, hey, I've got an idea for something to do with medicine or something to do with aerospace or something to do with a whole bunch of other fields, they would talk to you, they would work with you on your research, they'd offer you facilities to grow your business as a start point. That's not really happening with cybersecurity. Why do you think that is?
It's not my area of expertise, kind of tech transfer and all these things that happen in American universities. What I will say, though, is that we often describe the Israeli Defense Force and 8200 as the best cybersecurity school on the planet. And so actually what we're doing is we're identifying that great talent, oftentimes coming out of the IDF, and then we work with them in a very commercial way. If you start with the basis of a great team, great technology, we bridge that gap to the commercial end markets, I hope, very efficiently. And given that, we don't end up doing a lot of partnerships at the university level.
Are you seeing an increasing pressure on startups to get patents filed? If we look around at the moment, there's a lot of companies searching for patents. Many of them are going to fail very quickly. But the problem is you've got no real cohesion between patent systems around the world. When you talk to companies, how early in the conversation does the, do you have a patent on this? Whose patent could be prior art? Does that come up?
It certainly comes up. I would say at our stage, the founders we meet, again, pre-product, pre-company, pre-incorporation in most cases, it's more about the ideas that eventually will be patented. And so we certainly encourage our companies to build up patent portfolios. It is part of the IP, but I wouldn't say it's a main part of our diligence. In a lot of cases, you think about how complex security environments are from a customer perspective. If you're a first mover and you can build out the necessary integrations to seamlessly move into the market and sell into a market, that might not be patentable, but it is in a way defensible, at least in the short term. And so that's more how we think about defensibility. Now, there are cases, and we have one portfolio company in particular, Karamba Security, does security for connected autonomous vehicles. They have an amazing patent portfolio. And so in some cases, it will be more important than others, but the defensibility of the tech is always something that we're going to consider as part of our process.
If we look around at a lot of these companies, there seems to be a touch of the snake oil sometimes with smaller companies. They all think they've got to say, we do AI, we do machine learning. The reality is they might have a smart algorithm, but there's not a lot of actual artificial intelligence as it would be seen in an educational space. How hard is it sometimes to talk to these companies and say, you've got to drop some of these buzzwords and actually talk about what you do, not what you think you're marketing?
I can tell you it's very easy to talk to companies about that. How receptive they are to what we have to say, that's what might vary. I speak probably on average to 2 chief information security officers every day. I could probably count on one hand the number that have just said to me, I'm really looking for AI. I'm looking for machine learning. What we do is we say, okay, what is the problem that needs to be solved? Now we've identified a problem space. Then what's the value proposition? Does your value proposition meet that problem? Does it solve part of it or all of it? Are you ripping and replacing something else? And then if the problem is validated, the approach is validated, okay, let's talk about how you're doing it. And that's really where we look at it on the stack. We have had presentations that we've either seen or our portfolio companies have put together. And a lot of times our founders will like to lead with the tech and they'll say, here's our AI and here's why we're so special. If you're a customer, if you're chief information security officer, you don't even know what they're doing yet. And so that's really where we try to come at it from. Hopefully that positioning and messaging is something that we can be helpful at the very early stages. So by the time it's a Series A, Series B, our companies have really figured out the problem, the value prop, and then hopefully a differentiated technological way to do that.
What are the top 3 tech problems you're seeing them all trying to solve?
Again, it's very customer driven. We listen to customers. They tell us what they need. Automation and orchestration is the number one thing that a chief information security officer is looking to solve for. You can call them the unsexy problems, the blocking and tackling, that because they are so resource constrained by a lot of estimates, 3 million open positions in security right now, they need the ability to take those vulnerability management, asset management, incident response. How do you do that in an automated fashion is probably the number one thing we hear. We also hear quite a bit about enterprises adopting cloud. People are sometimes surprised at just how far we have to go as a space in terms of enterprise customers and moving to the cloud. I think a lot of the legacy solutions, what they do on-prem, they can do very well, but there are cases where they are not able to do that in cloud environments. It's a different architecture. And so that's something we hear quite a bit about. And then a third thing would be just the proliferation of IoT and the danger that poses to enterprises. There's more and more connected devices. You hear a lot about zero trust and basically the perimeter is dead. That all goes into that idea that you really have to have visibility into devices, as well as an understanding of what they're running and what is in and out of policy.
I'm intrigued compliance wasn't part of that top 3 conversation. If we look around, people are struggling to understand what compliance is. Yes, that feeds into incident response, because if you don't understand compliance, you can't possibly have a proper incident response.
Yeah, I think compliance, that's certainly something we hear about, especially in the data governance space. So, of course, GDPR, CCPA, and you do hear a lot about that, but it's not just a compliance problem. And if you're talking to the CISO, certainly they're worried about compliance and thinking about that, but they're also worried about the security of data access governance, for example. There's a lot of overlap. We're seeing blurring of the lines between security and IT, between security and legal, between security and compliance. A lot of these solutions that we see have to play across multiple groups, which makes it in one way more difficult because you have more stakeholders, more champions you need to win over. But in another way, it really presents an opportunity because there's all of this space to add value across all these different departments, which is essentially there aren't a lot of legacy providers that do this.
I said at the beginning we're here at Black Hat. Is this a fishing trip for you to see what people are saying, talking, asking about, or are there opportunities here that you see for companies coming who are trying to get some awareness of what they do?
For us, it's a lot about just getting smarter on the space in general. So we have two people from our team in Israel over here. We have all four people from our U.S. team. And we are attending sessions. We're meeting with our advisors, with potential advisors, with partners, large firms like Accenture, and really trying to build up those relationships, support our portfolio companies, almost all of whom are here. It's very unlikely that we meet a new team here thinking about something. Our team is on the ground every single day in Israel doing just that. And so the chance of us meeting a new team here, small, in a way that's kind of nice. Because we can really focus on getting smarter in certain areas. There are certain maybe spaces where we have a company or we're thinking about investing in a company, and we want to really go to those booths and understand what those products look like and understand a little bit more about where the gaps might be and where the opportunities for us might be.
So what in particular are you looking to improve knowledge around?
It's probably in line with our current portfolio company. We are with our companies in the weeds. We're going to board meetings. We have a company doing continuous vulnerability remediation, Vulcan Cyber. We have a company doing vulnerability assessment for cloud environments, Orca Security. So anything around vulnerability management right now, whether that's the scanning, whether that's the prioritization, the remediation, some of the outputs of that, so patch management or changing configurations, how all of that fits together is of particular interest for me because we have two companies deep in that space, and it's good to get a refresher in front of some of these, whether they're competitors or complementary players. You can only do that probably two times a year, RSA in here. We'll take a lot of time on the floor thinking through that.
I confess to being a little jealous. Most of my time is going to be spent sitting in the press room talking with companies, not in sessions and out on the floor. John, thank you for talking to us.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Ian.